Welcome to the 21st Macro and Volatility Podcast. Today is Thursday, May 29th, 2025. My name is Eric Bender of Passaic Partners. I am joined by my longtime friend, colleague, founder, and CIO of Passaic Partners, Josh Silva. We are a derivative specialist firm, practitioners, and asset managers. As always, we're joined by a friend of Passaic, Michael Purvis. He is the CEO of Talbach and Capital Advisors, a cross-asset and macro research firm. Today, we are very pleased to welcome our inaugural guest to the podcast, Lisa Audette, founder and chief investment officer of Tall Trees Capital, an energy and energy transition specialist manager. Before we dive into today's topics, we ask that if you like what you hear from any or all of our participants, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility Podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Reach out to Michael on Bloomberg and LinkedIn to discuss his institutional research product, and reach out to Lisa on Bloomberg and LinkedIn to discuss her investment strategy. All right, let's get into it. Despite last evening's news about the courts disallowing Trump's tariffs, Trump is pushing a big reshoring and reindustrialization agenda. There are major implications for this in markets and volatility, and we're going to take a look. The questions we are going to try and answer are, will these policies lead to an industrial renaissance in the U.S.? Who wins? Who loses? What's happening outside the U.S.? And how will this impact the macro and volatility landscape? Michael, let's start with you. Do you see Trump's policies leading to an industrial renaissance?
Well, Eric, I think you have to first step back a little bit and think of some of the structural pre-existing trends in the reshoring narrative here. And then think about how Trump's tariffs, however they settle out, might be a catalyst, whether that's a positive or negative catalyst, therefore incremental fixed asset growth. So I think it's important to step back and just think that, you know, if you look at the breakdown in CapEx, intellectual property related CapEx today represents more than one third of the aggregate $4 trillion a year in CapEx that the BEA computes each year or each quarter. A decade ago, IP CapEx was less than a quarter of the total CapEx. And if you go back to 2000, the peak of the tech bubble, at that point, that number was 17%, you know, about half of where it was today. So it's been a key and really sort of structural trend in the CapEx growth here. And this is literally today more than twice what, you know, sort of traditional factories and warehouse related CapEx is. Whereas, you know, two decades ago, that traditional factories were a higher number than IP-related CapEx. So this is an important trend, but it's also a very consistent trend. And the growth of this has been extraordinarily sort of solid and also a lot less economically sensitive than other types of capital expenditures. Now, of course, over the last couple of years and today and into the future, AI has really accelerated this chart. So it's been a phenomenal trend of all the different types of CapEx, you know, we can talk about here. So I think this trend, regardless of what happens with tariffs, I think this type of CapEx spend for the United States appears to be in really, really good shape. Perhaps not quite as perfect as may have been advertised a few months ago, but it still looks really, really strong. Will some of the input costs potentially increase as AI data centers and so forth are built out, certainly there. But right now, I think that at a big picture level looks pretty, pretty solid here. I think the harder part and sort of an interesting thing is to look at what the other parts of the economy are looking at. So if you look at sort of traditional energy, for example, that CapEx, right, which one would think would have been really helped by Trump's election, there, you know, if you look at what oil companies are dealing with. Oil prices are lowered, input costs are a lot higher here, right? So are we going to see a lot of commitment to production expansion in this environment? Not really. Will there be some regulatory relief? Certainly here. But I think there's a real concern here. So I think you have to really step back and just sort of look at the barbell of old economy energy on one hand, and then sort of this really strong structural theme of AI related CapEx here. So I think where there's a much harder questions here are for other companies that are sort of in the middle of that spectrum. For example, industrial companies, will they commit to sort of CapEx that's related to sort of a lot of what Trump wants to see on sort of making stuff in the United States that has been getting produced overseas in places like China there. I think I have a big question about the companies going to their boards, pushing for major commitments to building fixed assets, which have long depreciable lives, if that is really supported by Trump's tariff policies, for the simple fact that tariffs can vanish as easily as they've come. And so, if we have a new president in 4 years who doesn't like these tariffs, they can be quickly, easily undone. And of course, they're subject to the vagaries of the Trump administration as well. So I think that's going to be where a much more interesting discussion is going to happen. And I'm frankly, personally pretty skeptical about a lot of the fixed asset growth for a lot of things outside of AI, right now.
Well, thank you, Michael. Lisa, you specialize in specific companies, really drilling down to the detail. How do you think, I guess, comment on what Michael said and Trump's policies are going to drive fixed asset growth in the US and potentially abroad?
Thanks, Eric. Really appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast. So I think there are a few things that really stand out for me. So certain sectors such as AI and energy are deemed to be national security priorities. So I think these sectors will benefit from increased U.S. investment, but also potentially from investment from abroad. And we recently saw President Trump on his trip to the Middle East secure certain commitments around investment in both in energy and AI. So I think maintaining AI supremacy requires energy. It can't happen without energy. So I think, along with the structural tailwinds to higher power demand, I think, this AI wave that we're seeing, places us in an environment of, a power demand super cycle. So after years of flat growth, we're now seeing power demand rising at a 2.5% CAGR, through 2030. And although we hear President Trump talking about drill, baby, drill, it seems clear to me that fossil fuels alone are not going to be able to meet growing power demand. So we're seeing a resurgence in investment in areas like solar and wind and natural gas and nuclear and energy storage, and all of that's going to be needed to meet growing power demand. So we're seeing significant investments in this area, in these areas, and we think that we're at the beginning of what is going to be a multi-decade power investment cycle. And again, that's just the energy generation piece of it, right? We're also going to need to see significant investments to build out the transmission and distribution grids to get that power to the end users. We're also going to need to continue to build out our domestic supply chains in energy and clean energy. Obviously, we've got a big catch up to do with China, and we also need to accelerate investments in technologies around energy efficiency and automation. And while a lot of this CapEx is really just responding to structurally higher power demand, the current administration's focus on, specifically on competitive energy sources and the need to build out our domestic supply chains, it's really creating a lot of clarity around winners and losers in energy. So, on the winner side, I would say manufacturers of gas turbines, of grid equipment, critical equipment to upgrade the grids, LNG liquefaction trains, data center infrastructure, nuclear-fired power plants, solar modules. These are all winners and will contribute to fixed asset growth in the U.S. On the losing side of the equation would be investments, as Michael referenced, in sort of more fossil fuel investment in oil drilling, and of course in offshore wind equipment, which the current administration is very anti offshore wind, and then of course residential solar panels and EVs. These are all areas that we'll see a declining CapEx going forward.
Got it. Thank you. And as it relates to, that Europe and comments on Europe, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I would say on balance, I feel like President Trump has contributed in an important way to MEGA, make Europe great again, by pulling back on U.S. military support to Europe and realigning trade relationships. President Trump has forced the Europeans, to take matters into their own hands. And although, like the U.S., Europe is seeing power demand driven by increased AI investment, there's also two other important drivers, one being German fiscal stimulus. The other being, increased military spending across Europe. So the combination of the German fiscal boost and increased military spending equates to about 2 trillion of spending over the next 10 years. And so, this power demand surge is also going to create, like it is in the US, the need to upgrade grid infrastructure. And I think, the recent blackout that we saw in Spain and Portugal, only highlights the urgency to invest in Europe's power infrastructure. I mean, ultimately, I think we could see, tripling of CapEx in Europe to meet growing power demands, over the next decade.
That's great. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, you can't divorce AI from energy, and certainly there's going to be beneficiaries in Europe. Josh, what do you think about how that's going to affect the markets that you focus on as it relates to kind of volatility in the world we're living in now?
Sure. The way I'm looking at it, again, this is from a more of a macro, more vol-based look. And we're going to start from the basics. Let's start at global equities, and specifically the MSCI ACWI, which is up about 5% this year, while the S&P is only up about 50 basis points. EM equities, emerging market equities, are up about 10, just under 10%, while developed non-US, so anything outside of US or EM, which I refer to as the EAFE, is up almost 17%. So that's Europe and Japan has had one heck of a year. The dollar in context is down 8%. So that has helped non-US assets like EM and Europe go higher as well because of the dollar components. It's been a long, long time since non-US assets, especially Europe and Japan, have outperformed the US market. So this is something that's sort of new. Everyone has been sort of talking about this call on this call about it, and I think it's important to recognize the big difference. The other thing is I want to get into is EM realized vol. So not implied. So this is different for me. Realized vol is around 14. EAFE 30-day realized, it's all 30-day realized, is around 12, while the S&P 500 30-day realized is around 20. So what does that mean? The US doesn't typically trade at that much of a premium versus the world. Again, I'm talking about realized versus implied, which I never really do. I always typically talk about implied, but I think the realized is the real interesting part here. A general rule of thumb as a trader as I have is you buy EM volatility and sell US volatility when EM trades about two vols above US. And if you look at that right now, realized is the US above by six through two, that gets us to eight. So as a general rule, that's what I just did, a really bad trade by buying EM vol and selling US at plus two when the difference is closer to eight. That's a lot in a 14 vol environment. This is driven by a few factors, but I'm going to go back to a theme that we've talked about in the past, which is correlation. Correlation exists a lot more in EAFE and then next EM, and the least amount into the S&P 500. Part of the deglobalizing of the world is correlation between equity markets is falling. As certain time things become winners and certain things become losers, we're starting to see correlations of equity volatility or correlations between country equities is falling in quite dramatically, quite frankly. Right now, you could say European equities are winning, US are losing. And EM is offering the only trade where there still is uncertainty. And what I mean by that is every country in the EM, nobody knows who's going to win the trade. war or not trade war, who's going to be the next industrial country in Europe. And I'm not in Europe, I mean in EM. And so therefore EM is just sort of staying flat as, you know, they sort of contract each other as wherever trading is going. And so I think that's important to look at in terms of what's happening EM and EF, EFA, which is correlations are dropping between countries. While realized volatility is dropping, implied is falling too. But U.S. implied volatility and U.S. realized volatility is holding up, quite frankly, number one, because realized is higher. But most importantly, I think, is we have to talk about Treasury volatility. Treasury volatility remains very, very sticky. And what I mean by that is fixed income markets are really worried about what the future holds in terms of rates. Where does the 30-year go? How about the 2 to 10 year spread? These things are there are big focuses in the fixed income market, not to mention what happens with dollar and gold, which is secondary almost to a degree of what's happening in fixed income right now. The uncertainty in bond markets make calls in general difficult, making market calls in general difficult. A friend of mine asked me what equity tail I would own. In other words, would I own the left tail or the right tail, depending on where markets are going to go? And I've thought about it, and it came back with, unfortunately, the answer is both, because I don't know where the fixed income market's going to go. If rates go higher from here, you know, if the 2 to 10 year spread widens, if the 30-year goes significantly higher, we could have an 87 moment. The 87 moment was driven by higher rates, higher, you know, in terms of risk. And so we could have that type of moment, even though we have a fine economy. At the same point, if the rate situation improves, we could see the S&P end the year above 7,000. Why? To bring it all back to what my partners in crime on this in this podcast had said, is CapEx. We are seeing CapEx spending across the globe, across a lot of different things. And so I hope bringing this whole thing full circle makes sense at this point, because that's kind of what I'm seeing.
Yeah, no doubt exacerbated by the court's ruling last night. That could really add to what you said there too, Josh. Thank you. So at this point, if anyone has kind of a summary statement, final thought, key takeaway for our listeners, what would that be? Michael, you want to start there?
Yeah, sure. So I want to sort of build on what Josh was talking about, sort of this failing correlation concept that he's seeing sort of equity markets around the world. And I think that's really important here. Look, there's a very reasoned argument that tariffs, even if they end up being a lot less than currently advertised, will ultimately injure the economy and the stock market. But if you think about the arc of tariff policy, where we've gone from the shock of Liberation Day, which was really an index vol spiking event, to where we are today, which is a series of very detailed negotiations across a wide swath of countries and a wide range of products, what we're dealing with is sort of little, sort of more granular type sort of news flow. And I think that really sort of reinforces here in the US equity markets is sort of a very low correlation. And so what's happened in a sense is that Trump has really helped the dispersion traders keep their strategies alive and well here. So I personally, my market strategy hat right now, wearing my market strategy hat, is I think the equity markets are going to be trading lower, right? But I also think it's going to be in a sort of more lower volatility way, where the nuances are really buried within different companies and among different sectors there. I'd also just comment here that on this, Josh was highlighting the 210 curve and the back end of the treasury curve as sort of an added sort of risk feature in the cross asset setup. And that's 100% spot on here. To me, this higher term premium ultimately means higher equity risk premium, which is another way of saying valuations or PEs really have to contract, and potentially more so than might other be the case if rates were behaving themselves. So I think it's important to recognize that, you know, the 10-year yield and the PEs today are pretty similar to where they were at the beginning of the year. But the 10-year is at these levels for very different reasons here. And you know, Josh sort of alluded to this sort of breakdown in the dollar rate differential correlation. And if that doesn't really get rectified soon, that's going to be, another problem to sustain sort of equity valuations here at these levels here. So I think that is sort of more of, again, a more nuanced, meandering path lower. If in fact we go lower, it's not a big shock event like we had in, in early April there. But I think that's the things to be watching. And I think when I think about the CapEx story here, I think it's also important to remember that if the cost of debt capital stays high because treasury yields are staying high, that may only reinforce this dispersion of, what Google and Microsoft spend on CapEx may be kind of really locked, whereas a lot of the other CapEx from more levered, more traditional older economy companies, case for building higher fixed assets with higher debt capital is going to be all the more challenged there. So I think there's really that sort of divergence. There's something to be looking out for.
That's a lot of takeaways, Michael. That's a lot of takeaways. Lisa, what do you think?
Yeah, thank you. I think, for me, what's interesting to think about is, when we look at Europe versus the US, where will we see more fixed asset growth? And I don't think it's an easy, there's an easy answer there. I mean, I think in the US, we're obviously benefiting from a more robust technology sector. We have abundant cheap energy. We've got an improving regulatory environment, so it is an attractive place to invest on the one hand. But we're also coming off years of higher GDP growth, years of inflows. We have less stimulus in Europe, as I mentioned, and there's potential headwinds, to non-Middle Eastern capital inflows. In Europe, I mean, as I mentioned, we've got this triple whammy of tailwind, to CapEx. We've got AI. We've got German fiscal spending, and we've got military spending. But Europe's also coming off a lower base of growth. It's attracting new inflows of capital. But I think there's certainly legitimate questions around the ultimate impact of tariffs on growth and the pace at which these investments can actually happen. And then the big question, I think the overarching question is, can Europe actually reindustrialize and regain its competitive edge, in the global manufacturing space? So I think it's just fascinating to think about the headwinds and tailwinds. But I think you probably want to just be very selective in certain areas in the US and in Europe.
Josh, what's your
So
one or
I
two to grow on?
the macro trader in me goes back to the KISS thing, keep it simple, stupid statement. And I bring up what a Clinton political advisor, James Carville, said back in the day when we actually had government surpluses, if we can actually remember back that far. I used to think that if there was a reincarnation, I wanted to come back as the president or the pope or as a 400 baseball hitter. But now I'd like to come back as the bond market. You can intimidate everybody. So I thought that's like a nice little quote of the day, considering everything we're talking about. And I'll leave it at that.
Thanks, Josh. Thank you, Michael. And a special thank you to Lisa. I learned a tremendous amount today. You can find everyone on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective websites, PaseyPartners.com, TallTreesCap.com, and TallBakken.com. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, we will help you keep an eye on what matters in the markets.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.